Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the Amlaw Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Wildberg, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The Amlaw Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Lowther, and today we have a great guest. I'm talking about Peter Husey. He is a senior fellow at the National Institute for Deterrent Studies, and he's been a fixture in the nuclear world for 45 years now, Peter. You've been around a good long while, since the Reagan administration, I think, and you've been looking at the ICBM in particular and nuclear writ large. And so today we were going to talk about Annie Jacobson's new book, Nuclear War, A Scenario, which, you know, she's been on the speaking circuit selling her book and talking about what she thinks is wrong with deterrence and the nuclear enterprise and how war is likely to start and what American policy is. And the challenge for both you and I is that much of what Jacobson says is just flat wrong. And as a journalist who's written about a wide variety of topics, she's certainly no nuclear expert. She hasn't ever worked in the nuclear enterprise, but she did talk to some, she interviewed people and therefore was able to derive what she thinks the world looks like from those interviews. And we would, of course, dispute those conclusions. And so I thought, who better than the guy that's been around for much of the time that, you know, this covers, that we should talk about Jacobson's new book. So with that, let me open up and ask you a question. So Peter, as you've looked at Jacobson's book and her interviews with Friedman, and you know, she's been all over the place, what do you think are the main problems with her fundamental arguments?
Well, thank you, Adam. I appreciate being asked to talk about this. As I go back all the way to the actually Reagan transition team in 1980, her biggest problems are manifold. She completely gets the history of what Ronald Reagan proposed and what he did, saying that in an interview she did recently with Joe Cernciony, she said that he reversed his views on nuclear weapons, previously wanted to be superior to the Russians and outmuscle them, and he completely changed because of the movie One Day After. Number two, her views of what American policy are really bizarre. I mean, they're just totally wrong. I've asked probably some of the top nuclear people in this country that were in the Pentagon for 30, 40 years and then in the White House who did targeting, did assessments of these things, and they have no idea where she got these. Well, I do know where she got these ideas. She got a lot of them from Dr. Perry, the former Secretary of Defense, who knows better. But so many of the things she does is wrong. Now, third, she says deterrence itself is not only immoral, but it won't work because any use of nuclear weapons, one weapon, is enough to perpetuate Armageddon, and we all die. In fact, close to 5 billion people die, according to her scenario. Now, finally, what's her scenario? It's quite North Korea, for some reason, launches a nuclear weapon, a 1-megaton weapon, hits the Pentagon, and they blow up a nuclear power plant in California for some reason. We respond with, believe it or not, 83 ICBMs aimed at North Korea. And she says we have to launch within 6 minutes. And I'm not quite sure why she says that, because there's no basis for it. But she says an ICBM can be launched very quickly, but a sea-launched ballistic missile takes 15 minutes. So she artificially creates the need just for ICBMs, which she says can't reach North Korea without going over Russian territory. The Russians say, oh my God, the Americans are attacking us, because she says their early warning system is bad. They then launch everything they have at us. We say, oh my God, we're being attacked by Russia. We launch everything back at them. tens of millions of people die in the next 24 hours. And at the end of 72 hours, nuclear winter has occurred and billions of people eventually die because the sun can't get to the earth anymore. Because there's, she says, 300 billion tons or million tons, I'm not sure what it, of soot goes up the atmosphere and the sun can't reach the earth. That's the scenario. Now, here's the problem.
But Peter, okay, let me ask about that. So is what you're saying is that Annie Jacobson argues that we do solve the global warming problem? Because that's what I hear you saying, is that she says through the use of nuclear weapons, we stop global warming.
Well, it's Carl Sagan's idea of nuclear winter. But remember, when Sagan talked about nuclear winter, I actually went and looked at all his information. I took every article he wrote and he cited. And then I took every article that was footnoted in all those books, and I had a stack of stuff 6 feet high. And I went through the whole thing. And it all came out to his previous studies of dust storms on Mars, which he said would occur not with an all-out exchange of nuclear weapons, but a very small number of nuclear weapons would create nuclear winter, because he said Ronald Reagan believes in the use of a small number of nuclear weapons because he wants to fight a war and win a nuclear war. And therefore, that's why he came out with his information in just in time for the 1984 presidential election. So what Annie has done is take a disparate number of really stupid ideas. Number one, that we have a launch on warning thing. If we see a missile coming by on the blip on the screen, the president will be jammed up, she uses those words, by militarists in the Pentagon. She says admirals and generals. To launch immediately back at wherever the missile's coming from. And basically, the PSYOP, that football the president has that looks at various options, is all predetermined and scripted to have all-out general nuclear war, that the president really has no choices. He'll be jammed up and pushed in that direction. And so she says over and over again, she says, use of one nuclear weapon inevitably leads to all-out nuclear war. There's no alternative. That's the way it is. So the whole idea of responding with nuclear weapons to a nuclear weapons attack, she undermines and says it's a really stupid policy. She actually says it's immoral. And then she says MAD, mutual assured destruction, which, by the way, you know and I know we don't, that's not what we do anymore. She says that itself is MAD. And then she's asked, well, what should we do as an alternative? She says, diplomacy and communications. But as you know, our old friend Angela Cotevia always would ask, communication to do what and diplomacy to accomplish what? She never says. She does say we should have reductions. And then every so often she goes down the disarmament rabbit hole. But she doesn't say, how do you get there? Remember, 2 years ago, I debated Ward Wilson of Princeton about should we have Global Zero and go to disarmament or not. And I argued, no, we can't get there. And when the host took a poll in the New York audience, in New York City, when I spoke, when we started, he said the support for disarmament is 33%. And going with deterrence, which is my position, was 18. At the end of the debate, it was 54% for my position and 33% for disarmament. Global Zero. So Global Zero didn't move at all. And I tripled my points. Now, that was a New York liberal audience in Soho in a theater, both online and in person. And the reason is the arguments are all, Adam, on our side. We don't have a launch on warning strategy. We do not have an automatic launch everything. She used the word that the strategy is to empty the bag, so to speak. We'll just launch everything. And there's nothing automatic about it. But the real kicker, Adam, is 4 times the missile defense system in Alaska tries to shoot down the one North Korean warhead coming to the Pentagon. And they miss all 4 times. And the reason is she relies on Ted Postol, I believe now a retired professor at MIT, who hates national missile defense. He's testified that it can't work, not that it won't. But he says it can't work. Well, he's talking about mid-course, where supposedly you can't differentiate between the real warhead and a lighter decoy because there's no atmosphere. But that doesn't say anything about space-based interceptors, lasers, Moose Phase intercept. And he dismisses the whole idea of missile defense. And she does too. So she says that's not an option. But what it really comes down to, Adam, is she puts no options on the table. She just criticizes and says deterrence itself is immoral and mad, M-A-D. She uses the term. And she says that over and over and over again. So to me, she gets U.S. policy completely wrong. She said our policy still is to outmuscle the Russians, to have more warheads than the Russians, which is crazy because the arms control deal we signed, we have less than they do because theater systems aren't even controlled, and they have at least 2,000, and we have a couple hundred. So just on that basis alone, we have ceded that the Russians have more, and then China has no controls. So add China to Russia in 2030, 2035, they'll have at least twice as much as we have. And we have ceded that on the table up front. So this idea that we're trying to become superior to Russia and outmuscle them and push them around, which is her theory and her thesis of how this whole thing started at the end of World War II.
Yeah, I guess if we want to, you know, let's take the scenario which serves sort of as the opening gambit for her arguments. And so, you know, I play war games pretty regularly and have done so for many years as an airman and in subsequent jobs. And I play the nuclear war games, large Title 10 games and others. And so as I looked at her scenario, there was nothing about it that I thought was even plausible. I mean, scenarios don't, you know, you're not trying to mimic reality necessarily. War games have objectives, and you design a war game in order to accomplish an objective. You might want to test, there's something you generally want to test or know more about. Maybe you want to know how a weapon system could be employed. You know, what ways could it be employed that you haven't thought about? You might want to know how somebody would likely react, red team versus blue team. You might want to see what it takes to go in a certain direction. Like, so in many nuclear war games, you want to see what nuclear use might look like. How would that work out? And so the game will be designed specifically to force players to employ nuclear weapons so that you can see how that tit for tat looks. But the point I'm trying to make is just that nuclear or that war games in general are arbitrary and are designed to accomplish some specific purpose. So to look at war games that Paul Bracken played, for example, and say, well, they saw general nuclear war and therefore that's what's going to happen. That shows a very poor understanding of the purpose of war games and how they can and are designed. And so I thought that was sort of problematic. And then just, you know, how the North Koreans acted is not how we expect them to act. The Russians, the failure. One thing, you know, that was part of her war game was this. The Russian president was trying to reach the American president. The American president's out of pocket, so he can't reach him. So therefore, they assume it's a legitimate attack. I mean, the Russian ITWAS system, the integrated tactical warning and attack assessments, just terrible. It's just so many. It's almost like a Laurel and Hardy or like the Three Stooges. And it's just, it's so far from reality, because one of the big things in war games is that you're constantly telling war game participants, don't fight the scenario, don't fight the scenario, because a war game participant is always like, hey, that's not exactly how it would happen. And so you got to say, don't fight the scenario. We're trying to achieve an objective and a learning goal. But hers is so absurd that there's just no way that anybody playing this war game would not fight it.
No, you're right, but there's something much more sinister. The war game that she does, or her scenario, is scripted to make our current deterrent policy look bad. For example, she says we have a launch on warning and we have an official hair trigger alert status that we call ICBMs. And because we have to launch in 6 minutes, which no one explains why, we can only use ICBMs, and they can't reach North Korea without going over the Russians. And the Russians think they're being attacked. So every part of her scenario automatically leads to the next step, which is towards Armageddon, which is her point. Her point is one missile, one warhead, in this case, another warhead hits California, is inevitably leading to a scripted end or objective, which is all-out nuclear war, so that you can't object to, well, wait a minute, that won't happen. She says, oh, yes, it has to happen. And she rigs the script, so to speak, to get there. And I noticed what's fascinating is most of the people she interviewed want to kill ICBMs. You know, I have ICBMs are in my DNA. She says they're on hair trigger alert. Not true. They're the only missile that can reach North Korea. Not true. They have to go over Russia. Partially true, but partially not true. And we would use...
Well, the problem is she assumes that we would use ICBMs to strike targets in North Korea. We also have a sea-based leg and a, you know, right, and bombers. And she, you know, she really ought to consider that we might not want to, that we're smart enough, that we, the Americans, are smart enough to know not to fly ICBMs over the Russians for the very reason that she thinks global nuclear war starts.
But there's the part of it that's interesting, since you have to launch in 6 minutes, she says submarines can't be launched before 15 minutes. And so the only option is not an SLBM from the Pacific Ocean somewhere. But she also excludes completely the idea of a Tomahawk Navy cruise missile that's nuclear armed, which we did have, and we're now building, thank God. We could use that, or you could have an effective missile defense, but at either one of those completely blow away her scenario, which is this all leads to general nuclear war, which means we have to show restraint. We can't, modernization of nuclear weapons is bad. The ICBM leg of the triad is destabilizing. She goes through all those arguments, and she relies on Bill Perry, and she relies on the arms control people like Hans Christensen and others, who, even those quoted in the book, are completely, as I've talked to Dr. Perry about this before, and he seems oblivious to us, we do not have a launch on warning policy. And he'll say, well, we have the capability of doing it. But as General Welch, the former chief of staff of the Air Force and STRAT commander, said, if you're standing in the ledge of your apartment building 20 stories up, you have the ability to jump. That doesn't mean you will, because it doesn't make any sense. If you're interested in committing suicide, you will, but generally it's not the case. So all the scenario, Adam, is rigged to go in one direction, which is general nuclear war. And it's fascinating. She, all the way through, she blames everything on the ICBMs. They can't get to Russia, North Korea, so they have to go over Russia. They're on hair trigger alert, and they're war-fighting weapons. We have to use them first. I mean, you've heard all that. And it's, she packs it all into this book, very subtle and very, in some respects, very clever. The worst part, which is what I want to talk about, is how she completely gets Ronald Reagan wrong. And she rewrites history, which is terrible.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence. Now, before we turn to Reagan, we've got to take a quick break. So when we come back, I want you to explain this mischaracterization of Reagan's views. You're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back. And we're back, and we're talking to Peter Husing. We're talking about Annie Jacobson's new novel, Nuclear War, A Scenario. And Peter, you were, before the break, you were going to explain how Jacobson mischaracterizes Reagan's views on nuclear weapons. So I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. She doesn't just misrepresent, she just makes it up. And she just does this with some of her interviewees, and that is, they call it the Reagan reversal. They say he was in favor of having more weapons than the Russians. We're going to muscle them around, push them around. But he saw the movie one day at a time, one day after, excuse me. And that changed
his mind.
The day
after, yeah.
The day after. He changed his mind. He became in favor of arms control and so forth. Totally wrong. Has no basis. Let me walk you through the history. He proposed reductions as far back as the 1976 race for the nomination of the Republican Party. Number two, in 1981, in November 18, at the National Press Club, he called for 00 INF missiles in Europe. He called for major reductions in strategic weapons. He said, I wrote a letter to Brezhnev saying this hostility between the two countries is not necessary. He did that while he was in the hospital, having been shot. And he said, I had some time to think about things, which he did. And he read from the letter to Brezhnev. And he went through. Now, in 1982, Congress cut the money for ICBMs, for MX. They've created something called the Scowcroft Commission. That's when I started my seminar series, which you have continued here 40-some-odd years. What did the Scowcroft Commission endorse? Missile defense, INF-00 option, 50% cut in strategic nuclear weapons, building the Ohio-class submarine, the ICBMs, the MX, the cruise missile for the bomber, the B-1, the B-2, and peace through strength. And I know because every member of the commission, with exception of Bill Perry, came and spoke at my seminar series about why the commission endorsed Reagan's peace through strength strategy. Okay, what happened the next year, that later that year, one day after came out? Did Reagan change his mind? No. What he did was pushed even harder, but for the armed control component as well as modernization, Congress said, and this is Pat Schroeder, the congresswoman from Denver, member of the Armed Services Committee, said, we're going to fence all the nuclear money, and we'll wait for the after the election in 84, president, and then we'll vote on whether to go forward with what Reagan wants to do, or we go over the nuclear freeze. While the election was held, Reagan won 49 states. I was intimately involved in what was called a 90-day campaign. We had 90 days, March, April, and May, to have 16 consecutive votes in the House and Senate. Everyone had to be successful, or the nuclear modernization program went down the tubes. We won every vote, including one in the House Appropriations Committee, 29-28. That's when I also had all these members of the Scowcroft Commission again, so outside people like Senator Nunn, to talk about this and do part of my seminar series. So I was intimately involved in this. And what's fascinating is the idea that Reagan gave up missile defense and gave up nuclear modernization. The Mondale campaign, what was their central message in the campaign of 84? Kill SDI and kill strategic nuclear modernization. Well, if Reagan had already given it up and said, okay, we're going to show restraint, okay? And what's fascinating, Adam, is even worse. The arms control community, when Reagan said 00, they said, it's a joke. You know Russia will never accept it. That's why you proposed it. They won't accept it. Then you'll be free then to go and deploy the Pershings and Gleckhams in Europe. Second, when he proposed this 50% reduction in strategic weapons, they said, it's a trick. They blamed it on Richard Pearl. They said, you know the Russians will never accept reductions, and therefore you're proposing what you know they'll reject, so you'll be free to go forward with modernization, and you can leave arms control in the dust. One other thing Reagan proposed, reductions of conventional forces in Europe, what was known as Conventional Forces Europe, CFE, which we eventually got when the Soviet Union collapsed and the Warsaw Pact collapsed. But fascinating to me is you take every one of elements of Reagan's proposals, every single one was implemented except for SDI. We only got a small number of interceptors in Alaska under Bush 43. It's interesting. The Posture Commission has now endorsed missile defense against Russia and China, protecting CONUS, the continental United States, which was Reagan's vision. So this is just craziness. that Reagan called the Great Reversal, gave up his peace through strength ideas and adopted their ideas, which is crazy because one of the things he says all through this period is the nuclear freeze is not the answer. And isn't it fascinating? The arms controllers that say we have too many weapons wanted to freeze Russian weapons at 13,000, which is what the freeze would have done, and us at about 10,000. At the same time, Reagan was saying, no, let's go to 6,000 and then start to, let's go to 3,500. And eventually, as you know, we're down around 1550 plus or minus a couple hundred warheads. This, what they're trying to say is, with the movie changed Reagan, this book will change Biden or you fill in the blank, whoever you think the president is going to be. It's bad history. It's false history. It's not right. It's wrong. They make it up. Adam, there's no other way to be polite about this. They make this stuff up. And I know they're not stupid, and I know they have a lot of money, and it started with Oppenheimer. The New York Times has got a series called At the Brink, saying the same thing. And then Netflix, I'm only about halfway through the 9 sessions, Netflix has a series on The Bomb, which is going in exactly the same direction.
I watched an episode or two and cut it off because it was just so biased.
Yeah, but it's the same theory starts with the Oppenheimer thing and the nuclear bomb and how bad it is. Let's say up front, any use of nuclear weapons is what America wants to avoid. That's what deterrence is. Let me finish this segment with one point. She gets this completely wrong. She thinks escalate to win is U.S. policy. And she quotes General Hyten. What Hyten was saying is escalate to win is what Mr. Putin has adopted because if he's losing a conventional war, he wants to threaten to use nuclear weapons to get us to stand down. And what's fascinating is the head of Strategic Command, Admiral Richard, who's now retired, and General Cotton, who's currently there, have both said if nuclear weapons are introduced into a conventional conflict, here's the quote, nothing holds, meaning our conventional forces can't win. Well, then why would we introduce nuclear weapons into a conventional fight when we know everything goes crazy and you're probably not going to win at best? You know, lose, everybody's going to lose. But that is what Russia believes. And here's the kicker. Russia believes you can fight a nuclear war in a limited number of nuclear weapons and win, as does Xi Jinping. Because remember when Japan said, we're going to come to the defense of Taiwan if you attack it, Xi Jinping said, we will use nuclear weapons and we will destroy you and you will surrender just like you did in World War II. Well, Japan's not a nuclear armed country. So there's your answer. The problem is the crazies, the bad guys, believe nuclear weapons can be used. We don't. That's why we have a deterrent policy. We think it's crazy to use them. Nobody knows what will happen if they are used. But there isn't an alternative, which is my end point, is what's the alternative, Annie Jacobson, if deterrence itself is immoral and you call it MAD, M-A-D, then what is your alternative? Diplomacy and communications doesn't say anything because it's diplomacy to do what and communications to do what. Am I in favor of arms control? Yes, if it's done right. Am I in favor of a strong deterrent? Yes. But I'm not in favor of unilaterally cutting back on the one thing that has prevented war for 75 years under the hope that the bad guys are going to show restraint and we're all going to, you know, sing kumbaya and go off into the sunset.
You know, it's funny that advocates of nuclear disarmament appear to be completely okay with a return to great power wars. And it's what makes it so much more problematic is that, you know, the world's population has increased 300% since 1945. So since 1950 technically is the year that we look at this, but since 1950, the world's population has more than tripled. And poverty has been reduced at a rate that's never been seen before in 70 years. And they also say that technological achievement, that man's knowledge has exceeded that of what existed in all human history previously. So we've seen unprecedented growth, unprecedented prosperity, unprecedented wealth, unprecedented, success and growth. And part of that is because we haven't been waging world wars that consume, and people may not realize or remember, during World War II, the United States spent 45% of the nation's gross domestic product on the war effort. That's almost half of every dollar Americans created during that time. Wars are expensive, and 100 million people lost their lives. And then also, if you look at great power wars, what brought about the rise of the Soviet Union? World War I. What brought about the victory of the Chinese Communist? World War II. So there are these second order consequences that lead to tens of millions of more deaths. So this idea that we want to return to that state of affairs is one that I just don't grasp.
Well, it's interesting. There was a Navy admiral that did a chart about how many people died on average between 1914 and 1945 during the two great wars compared to today. And he was like in the mid-90s, I believe. And it's 1/200th or 1/2000th. It's minuscule. And he said, the thing is that the Russians went after us through terrorism, wars of national liberation. They went after us in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Mozambique, Ethiopia, Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. I mean, they didn't sit still. And the Chinese are doing this now, but they're adding the component of economic warfare. But you're absolutely 100% right. It's not that I'm embracing nuclear weapons, but going back to making conventional war safe for humanity has resulted in, as you said, 95 million people killed in 30 years. And there are about 101 conflicts currently in the world. But one of the reasons they stay at the current state of where they are is the nuclear umbrella and the nuclear deterrent. Because we could say, we're not going to protect Taiwan, we're not going to protect NATO, and then we'll have a multiplicity of nuclear weapons. Now, I don't mind some of the good guys getting weapons because I trust them, but the bad guys get them too under the rules we have adopted. And they don't know how to operate. They don't know how to work with them. Recklessness, laziness, an oops means that something goes off somewhere. And in some parts of the world, a nuclear warhead going off in North Korea, the wind's going to blow that into Seoul in the south, and you're going to have a lot of radiation sickness and a lot of cancers and a lot of deaths through could be just inadvertence and stupidity. That alone is why North Korea should never have nuclear weapons, let alone the fact they're evil. So deterrence may not be the perfect solution. It may not be what you would choose if you had unlimited amount of choices, but for 75 years, it has kept the peace, and you can improve it. You can make it better. You can go to lower levels if that's necessary. You can build missile defenses than necessary. But Annie Jacobson, God love her, I don't know, she relied on a lot of people, just simply made stuff up, because these aren't stupid people. It is not a factually correct book. It's very, very poor. And it's, if the extent that it scares people, can you imagine the folks overseas who are our friends have this book that's very popular that says deterrence is immoral? Doesn't work. What do you think our enemies are going to think when they say, do these crazy Americans really have a launch on warning, hair trigger, nuclear deterrent? Because we don't. But on the other hand, here you have movies and books and, you know, very popular. Now, she's had like 1.8 million hits, I believe, on her website. So in my view, is very important that the facts be laid out and the truth laid out, because there are literally tens and tens of thousands of Americans like yourself and others who for 50, 60, 70 years put together a deterrent policy to keep us safe. And their entire moral foundation is being called into question. And I don't think that's not right. That's not fair, because as she says in her book and in her interviews, she interviewed people that said, well, we stopped war for 50, 70 years. And she would come back and said, no, you're going to cause war that's going to kill 5 billion people.
Yeah, like she can predict time.
Well,
So, all right. Well, we are unfortunately out of time, and we didn't even get a chance to bring Bob the Genie out. So that's a sad, sad day. But we are, you know, we strive to be a show that people can listen to on their way to work. So we don't want to ever go too long. So with that, Peter, thanks for joining us on this episode of NucleCast.
Thank you, Adam. My best to you, and thanks to Miss Charrington for her help as usual.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode. Well, great interview with Peter. He was it was interesting to hear him talk about, you know, Reagan's views, and as somebody who was there the whole time, I you know, that sort of makes it particularly interesting. So that was something I found interesting, you know, to talk to somebody who was there for the whole thing. So enjoyed the discussion. Of course, you know, I just shake my head at Andy Jacobson's book, What Can You Do?
This has been a production of the NY Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Frumkall. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.